This is Mike Morgan, and we're talking with Robert Goyer of Flying, Tom Haines of AOPA, and Mac McClellan of EAA. So the NTSB released its final report on experimental amateur belt safety earlier in the year, examining 222 accidents in 2011, 54 of them involving 67 fatalities. 53% of these involved aircraft that were bought used and not built by the pilot in command. And in their report, it made 16 recommendations to the FAA and to EAA, many of them around transition training. So from what you all hear, how is this received within the FAA?
I think the FAA has received it as no surprise, but one of the very first attempts to quantify causes. And I think if there was a surprise, it was that the precipitating event in the single most common precipitating event was a loss of power. The fatal part of the accident was then a loss of control, but the engine quit first and the person was trying to get the airplane to the runway or whatever happened, a stall and spin. And so the accident is recorded as a loss of control, but that's a little like saying you die by hitting the ground. I mean, every accident, that's the bottom line cause. So that was higher than certainly we thought it would be here at EAA. And the other interesting part of that loss of power is it's not mechanical failures. It's almost always, in these instances, a failure of fuel to reach the engine, sometimes ignition. But it wasn't connecting rods breaking or, you know, the kind of catastrophic failure that all of us worry about. So that was a surprise. And then, of course, that it's a person buying an amateur build shouldn't be a surprise, because by definition each amateur build has to be unique. That's the rule. It was made one-off by a person. So the second owner can't possibly know everything, and that's the root of the NTSB's recommendation that the FAA ask or even demand a more comprehensive flight manual of builders. So that it follows the airplane in the same way a flight manual describes how a production airplane is going to behave.
Do you feel like the NTSB got it right? It's a funny question given that they're looking at hard data, but part of the creation of the report was a certain set of recommendations to two organizations.
I think particularly around training and initial training specifically. Certainly was no surprise. I mean, the kit manufacturers have been pushing for that for a long time. I met with three of the officers of the newly formed Association of Kit Manufacturers the other day, and man, they're all over that. They want nothing more than to be able to get the people who are building their kits to do the initial flights in the proper way with the properly trained pilots, and for those who are buying an airplane that somebody else has built, a second-hand purchase, that those new pilots to the model have an opportunity and take advantage of the opportunity to get the right kind of training. So that was certainly an important part of it, and something that the manufacturers are all over and very supportive of.
Yeah, you know, and I started my life as an aviation journalist writing about sport aviation, and I've flown literally, you know, 100 different kinds of sport airplanes, from ultralights up through fast composite, retractable gear, pressurized aircraft. And so it's a really wide range of aircraft that are out there. But, you know, and I've been working with these same manufacturers that Tom was talking about for a long time. I know them well. I know their products. I know their plants. And these are excellent products. I mean, speaking generally, the products that the kit builders, the established kit builders, are putting out there are excellent products. They know their product. They know the process. They know it so well, to the point that, you know, they are experts on every nut and bolt and rivet that goes into that airplane. And it is a frustrating process for them, not because there's too much regulation often, but because they don't feel as though there's enough regulation. They want that kind of control. And I know that Dick Van Grunsven from Vans, who makes the most popular kit product in the world, that he's often been frustrated not by his aircraft that are going out there and being built the way he is asking to be built, but by people who go out and modify them. He feels as though he loses control in that instance, and that ratchets up the risk for his customers. So he's understandably frustrated by that. And having some requirements to have more documentation and to have the builders have better records of what they're doing and how they're doing it so that it follows the aircraft is an excellent idea. But I don't think there's any way around the fact that there is going to be increased risk with experimental amateur build. We just want to bring that risk down as much as is possible. And I think this is a good step towards that.
So it sounds to me like the data points to a pretty small number of changes which, if made, could have a disproportionately positive effect on the outcomes, right?
Certainly. First flights stand out. A builder may be the least qualified person to make the first flight, perhaps, and often he has been spending the time in the shop and not flying, so he's not particularly current in any kind of airplane. To take off in an airplane that may have some surprises due to rigging or who knows what is certainly a high risk compared to a highly experienced pilot who makes test flights for a living. So encouraging people to either be trained beforehand or to hire somebody else, because the early part of the flight testing stood out. And then there's a period at about 50 hours of total time on the airplane. There was another spike as the airplane had ended typically its test flying period. And nobody knows, but the guessing is that at that point the pilot perhaps became too comfortable and too confident and yet hadn't had enough time to find some quirk or something in the airplane that would cause him to lose control.
And that kind of training is promoted by many of these manufacturers who have programs in place. And again, they're frustrated because not all their customers take advantage of the programs that they offer.
Well, and the rules are counterproductive in the respect that only required crew is allowed in the early test phase of the test line. And so far, most interpretations have been that a qualified instructor in an experimental is not part of the required crew. So EAA is asking, and the NTSB is recommending, that qualified instructors be allowed to accompany a pilot if he chooses to fly his own early flights.
During the 40-hour flyout,
yeah,
for example.
And particularly during the first few hours that have shown to be a high-risk period. In a way, I understand that the concept is to minimize the exposure and have the minimum number of people at risk in the airplane. But on the other hand, aren't you lowering the risk for everyone if a qualified instructor is in there with the pilot owner?
We've got a couple of comments from folks who are listening live. One, a question for the panel. How can readers go about submitting an article to your magazine? Tom?
Ours is pretty easy. It's pilot@AOPA.org. We prefer by email, and we prefer that people send in a query that just a few sentences describing what it is, the sort of article that they'd like to write, and pilot@AOPA.org.
Robert Goyer, flying?
For flying, we too prefer email submissions, and you can do that at edit@flyingmag.com.
edit@flyingmag.com.
Right.
And Mac?
I almost insist on email. It's very hard to do anything these days with a printed material because somebody's got to key it in, because magazines are entirely electronic, even though they eventually end up on a printing press. The entire process is electronic. So send it along as an email to mac@eaa.org. I promise to look at it. I certainly don't promise to run it. And we're looking for unusual experiences, the kinds of things we don't want to duplicate or perhaps shouldn't duplicate, particularly to run an I'll never do that again column. So please send them along.
And so all three of you are interested, it sounds like, in unsolicited manuscripts and ideas, right?
Absolutely. One of the most popular column in Flying Magazine for many years has been I Learned About Flying from that. And it's completely reader-generated content. And it's stories of close calls the readers have had and lessons learned from them.
Same for us. Never Again has been in the magazine since the March of 1958, our very first issue. It's been there ever since.
And it's AOPA Pilot.
In AOPA Pilot. It's the most read page in the magazine, and it's all reader-submitted stories about their close encounters that they've lived to tell and share a tale that somebody else might learn from. So, yeah, we welcome that.